British actor Anthony Head has played at least two iconic figures, the smooth-talking neighbor with a mysterious smile and soap opera-style instant coffee commercials, and of course Rupert Giles in Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Now with coffee and crucifixes in his past, Anthony Head is cracking safes in the BBC TV series The Invisibles. He plays a criminal who comes out of retirement just to discover that his knees, if not his nerves, are not always up to the job. Here's a clip from The Invisibles after his first heist out of retirement.
How it went, aside from us demolishing your front room and becoming involved in a near-fatal car chase with the police. And one of our select band signing his name at the scene of the crime, not to mention leaving fingerprints of a quality that a forensics expert would struggle to mock up! Aside from that, A1, I should say.
Oh, come on, Morris, it wasn't all that bad.
The Invisibles has just become available on DVD in the United States. Anthony Head joins us from the studios of the BBC in London. Thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
This is a very funny series.
Thank you. I'm fond of it, I must admit. I liked Morris, even though he was a grumpy old man, as they say, and he was difficult for my family to live with, because you do, as an actor, you do bring the characters home with you, and they've had to put up with some fairly annoying people in their lives.
Does that make it particularly complicated because one of your co-stars is actually your daughter, Emily?
No, that was quite nice because she got to see what Morris was like on set. When your own child is playing your child, you've got all the emotions of a father are already there, they're already in place. And so it was lovely, and she's a cracking actress.
I've got to ask about, even after all these years, the coffee commercials.
Mm-hmm.
Taster's Choice here in the United States, and you, and forgive me for not knowing the name of the actress.
Sharon Moon.
The flirtatious neighbors, and this sort of developed as a soap opera storyline over the years. Let's just hear a clip.
You saved my life the other night.
The dinner party.
The coffee. Very successful.
How can you ever thank me?
I'll try and think of something. In the meantime, at least I can return your gold blend.
Look, I'm in the middle of something right now, but perhaps...
Perhaps.
Now, golden roasted, richer, smoother, Nescafe Gold Blend.
Now, you did this initially in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And then you and your co-star were hired to do this, the similar set of commercials in the US. And, of course, you switched accents.
Well, I did.
Could you do an American accent for us now?
Things to remember. Always log on to the backup PC first. Is your home database correct, e.g. Europe, Eurasia, etc.? Do you want me to go on?
It's a little soft, Mr. Head.
I'm sorry.
To try and be absolutely fair about this, I'm going to ask my next question in a British accent, okay? Anthony, yes, do tell us about your singing career.
That was amazing. I was... Why?
Do you like it? Do you like
it,
really?
That was fantastic.
I just might keep it for a while, you know?
My singing career... my first gig was out of drama school was Godspell. I've done Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, and so I can flip between comedy and drama and musicals and stage and film and TV, and I love singing, so it's you know, when I get a chance to sing every now and again, it's great fun.
I have to ask you about what it's like to play a romantic scene, and I'm thinking for those of us who love the comedy series Little Britain. That was quite a kiss.
Oh, well, he kissed me.
Don't pretend like you didn't enjoy it, or at least had to act like you enjoyed it. Set the scene for us, if you could, please.
At the end of a party celebration, when we've just won an electoral victory, and...
You're the Prime Minister.
I am the Prime Minister.
Yeah.
And my personal assistant has a crush on me, and I'm dancing with my wife, and suddenly Sebastian cuts in and starts dancing with me, and it becomes a slow dance, and I sort of... try and avoid any kind of clinch, and I duck away. I see that he's upset, so I go over and I say, look, I'm terribly sorry, but am I right in thinking I have the faintest inclination that he might have a crush on me? And he laughs it off.
Why the kid you that idea. No. I just wanted to say well done.
Oh, well, thank you.
You know, I puckered up and he puckered up and we kissed. It was like a limpet. It was extraordinary. I mean, I had, you know, no clue it was going to happen. And in fact, first take, which is the one that they used, you can actually see me smiling underneath. Because
well, that's why I thought you enjoyed it so much. Mr. Head, it's been so nice to talk to you.
Well, it's been nice to talk to you.
Anthony Head joining us from our studios in London. You can see him in The Invisibles, which is out now on DVD, and to see Anthony Head in his Taster's Choice commercials. What did they call it in Britain again?
Gold blend.
We can perhaps we can put one of each. Come to our website, npr.org/soapbox.
The TV sitcom is having another golden age right now on kids' cable channels. Nickelodeon and the Disney Channel are crammed with popular tween-aged comedians and laugh tracks. Shows such as Zoe 101 and Hannah Montana feature sitcom gags from the age of All in the Family, and even some of the same writers from shows like Roseanne. Nate DeMeo has our story.
If you're looking for the classic sitcom, the three-camera, film-before-live studio audience sitcom, just turn on Nickelodeon. Pretty much everyone below voting age already has. Dan Schneider runs several shows in the network.
I mean, iCarly, for example, with people all the way from 17 to 2. Now, that's a big, wide demographic. iCarly often is the number one show, not just on cable, but all of television.
We gotta figure out a way to get Sam out of detention.
Not gonna happen. Mr. Howard hates my guts.
Well, then maybe me and Carly need to figure out a way to get into detention.
Hey! iCarly, live from detention!
Nickelodeon and its mortal enemy, the Disney Channel, have kept the multi-camera sitcom alive, and have kept it free of the excesses of the schlubby husbands with improbably hot wives. Andy Bonnet is a programming executive with the Disney Channel.
There was a generation of adults that just saw a lot of bad sitcoms.
He says that the success of Seinfeld and Friends in the 90s bred too many pale imitations, and grown-up audiences got burnt out on laugh tracks and wacky neighbors.
The beauty of kids is they weren't part of that audience, so they come in with open eyes and embrace the format.
Hey, Maddie, just the tush I've been looking for. Can you close my suitcase?
Wait till I tell my friends that I sat on Hannah Montana's suitcase.
The Disney Channel has embraced the format with outrageous success. Shows like Hannah Montana and The Sweet Life of Zack and Cody have helped build the network and have fueled the Disney juggernaut by launching its current generation of movie and pop stars.
Now bounce up and down.
But we are a full-service hotel.
The writing staffs of shows like Hannah Montana are often stacked with veterans from the heyday of the network sitcom, people who wrote for Roseanne and The Facts of Life and The Jeffersons.
I don't think of myself as a guy who writes shows for kids. I really don't. I try really hard to write a good, solid sitcom.
Nickelodeon's Dan Schneider has been in sitcoms most of his life. He was actually on one years ago. He played one of the nerds on the 80s high school show Head of the Class. He says the people at Nickelodeon go out each time trying to write something that can stand alongside a Taxi or Bewitched, even if his audience has no idea what those shows are.
Unfortunately, kids today don't know the classics, and kids don't know Gilligan's Island anymore. They don't even know the Brady Bunch anymore.
But he says that doesn't give writers license to slip an old Laverne and Shirley bit into a script just because the kids won't know any better. Though he says he's not above the occasional reverent homage.
Oh yeah, this is really challenging.
As in this Drake and Josh episode, I Love Sushi.
Oh, this thing's going kind of fast.
Hey, can you slow it down a little bit?
The kids find themselves on a way too fast sushi assembly line, a la Lucy and Ethel at the chocolate factory.
I see all these kids laughing hysterically at Drake and Josh doing this bit. Isn't it amazing, you know, over 50 years later, still funny. It's the same exact bit.
You boys are doing a fine job. Speed it up a little!
This is exactly why I stay in the genre that I'm in. Television has become so niche-y. If you and I go outside and walk up and down Sunset Boulevard right now, and we go up to 100 people and say, did you see the last episode of Two and a Half Men? What, 6 or 7 are going to say yeah? Maybe? Well, you go up to 100 people, say 9 to 14, and say, did you see the last episode of iCarly? Half of them are going to say yes.
He says he's happy to be in the only corner of the TV business where he can still have the kind of impact that classic network sitcoms had, when everyone could stand around a water cooler talking about last night's MASH or sing the theme to the Beverly Hillbillies. It's good to know that someday his audience will be crowded around a keg in college, reminiscing about that one iCarly episode. For NPR News, I'm Nate DeMeo.
Now let's go to the movies. That computer-animated powerhouse, Pixar, has had 9 box office hits in a row, including WALL-E, Toy Story, and Monsters, Inc. Los Angeles Times and Morning Edition film critic Kenneth Turan looks at the 10th Pixar offering, Up.
Up, Pixar's latest effort, is not only good, it's one of their best. The credit goes to co-writers and directors Pete Docter and Bob Peterson. They came up with the idea of a cranky 78-year-old named Carl, voiced by Ed Asner, floating off to parts unknown when his house gets hoisted into the air by exactly 20,622 helium balloons. Also along for the ride is a pesky 8-year-old who stows away.
I don't want to walk anymore. Can we stop?
Russell, if you don't hurry up, the tigers will eat you.
There are no tigers in South America. Zoology!
Ah, oh, for the love of Pete. Go on into the bushes and do your business.
Okay, here, hold my stuff.
Because Up is a Pixar film, it's of course clever and playful. It also has the high excitement of an adventure story and enough menace to make it only the 2nd Pixar film to be rated PG instead of G. There's also the wordless visual magic of that floating balloon-powered house, as well as a genuinely wacky sense of humor involving a pack of dogs equipped with collars that turn their canine thoughts into words. As if all this wasn't enough, Up also generates genuine emotion by dealing unapologetically with one of Hollywood's last and most persistent taboos, old people.
So, you want to assist an old person?
Yep. Then I'll be a senior wilderness explorer.
Instead of a Clint Eastwood-type senior citizen who is fitter than people half his age, Up gives us a man who uses a walker and can't handle stairs.
Slow down.
Wet Lodge 12.
Kid!
Are you in need of
Thank you, but I don't need any help.
But still manages to be a hero when it counts. Up's multi-minute montage of the long married life of Carl and his wife Ellie is a small gem, and one that will stay with you for a lifetime. If parts of Up don't bring a tear to your eye, I just don't want to hear about it.
Kenneth Turan reviews movies for Morning Edition and also the Los Angeles Times. And we review more movies, including the Oscar-winning Japanese film Departures, at NPR.org.
Hey, David Green makes his departure from our studios today. Renee's back on Monday, but David will be listening for your reports from the road, and thanks for coming by.
It was good to be here, Steve. This Great. Is Morning Edition from NPR News. As you told everyone, I'm David Green.
And I'm Steve Inskeep.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Alyssa Bloch.
And I'm Michelle Norris. If there was one real surprise at this year's Academy Awards, it was the winner for Best Foreign Language Film. The front runner was widely thought to be the Israeli movie Waltz with Bashir, but the Oscar went to Departures. It's a Japanese film that had not yet opened in the U.S. Well, today, Departures opens. Bob Mandela says it's easy to see why the Oscar voters liked it.
When a Tokyo orchestra goes bankrupt, its cellist, a young sad sack named Daigo, finds himself unable to support a big city lifestyle. So he and his wife move back to his rural hometown, and he starts a job search. There's no orchestra to work for, but an ad offering a career working with Departures sounds promising. The travel industry intrigues him. So he arranges an interview and is hired almost before he sits down, at a high salary, too. There is, however, a catch. The word Departures in the ad was a misprint. The job involves working with the departed, the dearly departed, preparing bodies for cremation. Daigo is about to leave when the boss offers him his first day's salary and suggests he try the job and see. And soon the musician, who's played winningly by Masahiro Motoki, starts to get in touch with his inner undertaker. The stylized ceremonies, all performed with grieving relatives in attendance, turn out to require nearly as much delicacy as playing a cello did. Daigo discovers the rituals have a real beauty to them, also a habit of not going quite as planned, which can lead to unexpected comedy.
Hey,
What the film doesn't say, but what Japanese audiences would know, is that Daigo's initial reluctance isn't just about what he sees as the job's ick factor. Dealing with dead bodies and dead animals was regarded as unclean in Japan for centuries, and that prejudice dies hard. Those who prepare bodies are still widely discriminated against, and that discrimination can extend to families, so that if, say, your great-grandfather worked in a slaughterhouse, you may have trouble landing a job. So when the film empathizes with Daigo as his wife reacts with revulsion or his neighbors shun him, it's engaging in social criticism, which may be why director Yojiro Takita built so much humor into the story, even though slapstick seems at odds with the material, and why he made the visuals so seductive. The strategy definitely worked for Japanese audiences, who forked over more than $60 million at the box office, and while this lovely, sentimental film is hardly likely to have success on that scale in the U.S., it will absolutely delight the art house crowd. Multiplexes will be crowded with noisy summer films, after all, from which Departures will represent a sophisticated and elegant departure. I'm Bob Mondello.